Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show, of course, is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, it's just you and me, and we're going to dip into the archives in a little bit, and then we'll get after that, we'll get to the grab a pencil portion of this week's show. Just a reminder, this weekend is the final weekend for happening at the theater at the Fort, Arts for Lawrence. It's Indie Bard Fest, and it's the performance of Elizabeth Rex that yours truly is acting in, Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 7:30, and Sunday at 2 p.m. So if you happen to be in Lawrence, go check that out. You can go to IndieBardFest.com for all the information there. And then the Saturday after Thanksgiving at Theater at the Fort, at Arts for Lawrence, Arts for Lawrence Theater of the Fort, I'll be co-hosting, along with Jay Hemphill, a free screening of the film It's a Wonderful Life. So two chances to come out to Lawrence. Once again, IndieBardFest.com for all the information. Next week's show, I'll hopefully be able to catch up on some new and recent titles for me as well as for you. It's been a long time doing back-to-back plays, and I appreciate everybody's patience and understanding when it comes to new movie stuff. All right, also want to mention Sunday, November 21st at Clues Memorial Hall, and then Wednesday, December 8th at the Brown County Music Center in Nashville, Indiana. Yep, Mystery Science Theater 3000 Live, the Time Bubble Tour is happening. Two of the events in Indiana. Might dip into the archives and maybe preview this when it comes up. So once again, Clues Memorial Hall, Sunday, November 21st, and then Wednesday, December 8th at the Brown County Music Center in Nashville, Indiana. Go to mst3klive.com for all that information. All right, I'm dipping into the archives. There's lots of stuff to do this weekend. If you happen to be in the Lawrenceburg, Indiana area on Saturday, the Robert Irvine Dining Experience is happening at Lawrenceburg at the Hollywood Casino in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, 777 Hollywood Boulevard. And it's a good reason to dip into the archives. One of my favorite regulars. This was the very first chat we had back in 2010 to promote then new program called Restaurant Impossible. So anyway, here's my chat with Robert Irvine. Enjoy! Joining me on Film Sociology is a chef, television personality, and a gentleman who can crack walnuts with his biceps, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And yourself?
Hanging in there. Not as much snow as you guys, but we're doing okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, at least we didn't get... Well, where I am in Hilton Head, there's not much. It did snow, but when I was in New York, I think we got like 8 inches, 12 inches. There was drifts of 8 foot and crazy stuff.
Indeed. Well, this is a busy month for you because you have not one but two television programs that you're involved with. Let's start with Worst Cooks in America. Did you watch the first season, and did you know how far ahead did you know that you were going to be involved with the show?
Well, funny enough, about a year prior to the season one, we talked about it, and it never happened for me based on other things that were going on. And I saw season one and loved it because it's real, you know. Mm-hmm. And when they asked me to do season two, I was obviously very excited because I'd never done something where you're training people one-on-one except in my restaurants or in the Navy. So I was very excited to do it and to work with Anne Burrell.
It seemed like you were the right choice. Funny you bring that up because watching you on Dinner Impossible, you've had people help you that – Well, they're not always the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dinner Impossible is so real, and it's so, you know, and I always say it's the most real reality show on television because I really know nothing, and I find people who want to work with me, or they don't, whichever the case may be, and I sort of bring them in. And if they've never picked up a knife before, I expect great things from them, and I push them, and you can see that on Dinner Impossible when they get annoyed with me or they get upset with me. But, you know, we've got a job to do and a very short period of time to get it done, and there's no time for excuses or attitudes. We just get it done.
How has it been working with Chef Ann, and how much did you know her before getting involved with the show?
I didn't know Ann very well because, you know, I do my own thing around the country. Ann's show is set in a studio, and they tape all year. For me, I travel the country, so I didn't know Ann very well, only from the season one. And to work with her, she's a very intense person. She's a great tutor. You know, she was a culinary instructor before she became a chef.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very intense. You know, you think I'm the tough guy. In fact, I think she's tougher than me. I'm looking like the pussycat here, and she's like the ogre. But a fun, fun-loving person. And when you see the show, you'll know that we banter back and forth. She doesn't like to lose. She doesn't like to lose anything. She doesn't like, you know, she's in New York. What's the word I look for? One word, snap you in half person. She can stop a man in his tracks by saying one thing. And it's funny because as a gentleman that I am, I will never argue with a woman. So it's very, very interesting to see the dynamic between Anne and myself.
Did you have a strategy going in on how to work with these people?
Strategy, no. I just, you know, my military training is all about leadership. And what I wanted to do with, of course, Anne picked my team and I picked her team.
Right.
So what I wanted to do was be hard or firm, but nurturing at the same time. And that's very unusual for me from a DI standpoint, a Dinner Impossible standpoint. But I really had to understand each individual person and where they come from and their life and all them things that I don't really get into on Dinner Impossible. And then I could break them down one by one and say, okay, she's got this strength, he's got this strength. And just be firm and sort of, you know, hey, I'm your friend, but I'm also your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get this right or you don't do your homework, you're going to be going home. So strategy was always to win. and be the better teacher.
What was the oddest thing you've had to eat with the show?
The oddest thing I had to eat? Oh, my word. There were so many things. Burnt chicken, shepherd's pie.
Uh-oh.
Somebody brought in, which is one of my favorite dishes, and I couldn't eat it. It was so bad. Chicken that had been cooked for 19 hours. Meatballs that were made with Twizzlers. Just some horrific stuff. And these people thought it was great.
Now, after this, do you go home and make it just to make things right?
Make things right. you know, food is supposed to be fun, and you're allowed to make mistakes. But there are a few basic things you need to follow, you know? And I think after this eight-week period of doing with cooks, these people that were either on at the end of the show or got let go early, they all learned something to go home and continue to cook. And I think all of them, all 16 of them, are still continuing to cook. I still talk to some of them, Facebook and whatnot. And they found a new love. It's not out of a frozen container or a can. So I'm excited that they've gone on and done that.
Excellent. Now, I know, as you alluded to, you have a show coming up called Restaurant Impossible. What happened with the changing from one format to another?
It's very different. You know, Restaurant Impossible is almost like Dinner Impossible times three. Because I'm calm. I have to learn about the property that's going bankrupt. You know, the basic outline of the show is there's a bankrupt restaurant or about to go bankrupt. I have 36 hours or 2 days to turn it around, $10,000 to make it look new, remarket it, retrain the people, cooks and front of the house, re-put a new menu, and all this is done after I meet the owners, and then I ban the owners from the actual restaurant. So they never see the restaurant again or what I'm going to do to it until we reopen it 36 hours later, and normally to 200 or 300 reservations with a new menu, a new look, decor, new menus, new everything. So it's unlike Dinner Impossible or Worst Cooks. If somebody on Dinner Impossible, if I fail, you know, there's no real sort of after effects except my ego. Worst Cooks, somebody goes home. But restaurant is somebody's life and livelihood. Mm-hmm. You know, do you lose your restaurant? Do you lose all the money you put into it? And when you see these shows that we've just shot, I mean, 2 3-year-old kids putting $1 million into a restaurant and running a 50% food cost and payroll, $1 million. You know, these are people's lives. So you get all them emotions of happiness, frustration, anger. When I first meet them, they're, oh, we're doing everything right. Well, no, you're not, because you're going bankrupt. So it's, you know, the first 8 hours, they want to fight you and they want to argue with you. And then once you see that I'm trying to help them and teach their staff, then it's suddenly I become their friend. Mm-hmm. You know, their staff always want to fight you and they're doing everything perfect. But when I show them what they're doing wrong and then how to fix that, it's amazing the transformation of their attitude.
How much downtime did you get between restaurants when you were filming that?
Not very much, about a week. Between each restaurant, and we were in Delaware, St. Louis, North Carolina, New Jersey. I mean, just it's a hectic schedule because this year, obviously, I've done an awful lot of filming. We finished filming Dinner Impossible in June. I went straight into 8 weeks of filming in New York with Worst Cooks, and straight from that into restaurants. Mm-hmm. And in between, we shot Iron Chef and Celebrity Chop. And a lot of other shows that are airing or coming up soon.
Mm-hmm. Was there a recurring theme as to what was wrong with the restaurants that you took care of?
Yeah, I think everybody believes that, you know, they can run a restaurant and run a restaurant well, even if they've had no experience. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't run kitchens well. They don't market correctly. They don't, you know, a restaurant has to be revamped every 3 years, whether it be decor, menus. I change my menu in my restaurant every 5 weeks. So you've got to keep it fresh and keep people coming back. And you know, one of the restaurants we did in Mystic, Connecticut, I mean, the carpet had probably been down there like 40 years.
Oh.
You know, and it was old and outdated, and the menu was old and outdated, and they forget to change with the times.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, new restaurants open in the vicinity of these places, and they've got exciting food, they've got vibrant drinks, they've got, you know, live music, and they're taking all them type of businesses away. So it's just interesting to see that everybody has the same format, different places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't scream and shout and say, you suck and you do this. That's not what this is. I go in, I evaluate based on what I see and what I think this place should be and the surrounding area. I say, okay, this is what I think. I've been with a designer. I say, okay, this is what I want for this restaurant. How do you make this happen? We've got $10,000. We've got no sleep. And in 36 hours, we open this restaurant. Now I've got to market this, put it on radio stations, which I do because I love radio. It hits so many people so fast. And you get the word out so quickly. So we do a lot of radio stuff and a lot of chamber of commerce things to try and get the word out about this restaurant that people wouldn't normally know about. So it's really life-saving of not only health, but revamping their life, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is very meaningful to me.
When you
very different side of Robert Irvine.
Well, I mean, I think from the first impressions, especially with the beginning of Dinner Impossible, we see the aggressive, you know, forward moving. And but seeing you work, like I remember my daughter has the DVD of you cooking with kids on the Ratatouille DVD and, you know, working on Battle Sugar, which is now apparently a holiday tradition on Food Network.
Yes, that was an amazing show. I mean, that show, if you think about it, was shot 3 years ago. And it's still one of the most viewed things on YouTube for Food Network, which is hilarious to me.
because it was such a great show and it's timeless.
Mm-hmm.
The Ratatouille, and that is so funny you just brought it up. I was just talking about that with some friends of mine. You know, we did a, when we put Ratatouille to DVD, John Lasseter and myself, and Brad Bird in Los Angeles, we shot, the Food Network shot a thing where I cooked for two brother and sister from New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
and we did crepes, and it was so much fun because I believe that children obviously are our future culinarians, but also fitness and things like that. You know, I worked out this morning in the gym with every morning like I do, and there was four children there. They couldn't have been more than 8 years old, all doing push-ups and running around. And what a great way, fitness and food. And yes, that's the side of me. You know, I have a dad, and I love kids. And that's the side you don't really see from Dinner Impossible, because you see this guy's got to get this mission done,
mm-hmm.
and not fail. And that's unfortunately, some people see that, you know, they're going to the show halfway through, and they're like, oh, he's really aggressive, or he's, you know, until they really understand what the show is.
Mm-hmm.
And you get, it's funny, you get judged on that TV show, which is fine. I'm a very tough person in the kitchen, and I make no mistake and have no apologies for that. But the people I've worked with and turned out and they've gone on to do their things are executive chefs in their own right, and they call me every day of a factory or, you know, say, oh, look at this menu, what do you think? And that to me is amazing that I have that depth. You know, I have 5-year-old children, 9-year-olds. In fact, next week I have 2 cancer children, victims, patients, I should say, not victims, coming to Make-A-Wish to cook with me in my restaurant on Hilton Head for a week. You know, and people don't get to see that side of Robert Irvine, and I think Worst Cooks and Restaurant Impossible will show that side of me a little bit.
Well, and, you know, you got a sous chef in Indianapolis waiting for you. She's only 9, but she's willing.
I'm going to tell you, you have to get on a plane. You have to bring her to my restaurant. It would be awesome.
She loves travel. That shouldn't be a problem. Shifting gears for a little bit, when it comes to watching movies, can you watch a film that's set in a restaurant, or is it too grating? Are you taking too many notes?
I love movies. I am a huge movie. You know, in the last month, I've watched Salt, The Town. I just love movies. Red. I get so absorbed into the characters of what goes on, and especially if it's historic or if it's action. I'm a big action guy, obviously, uh-huh. You know, I'm a guy. But I can watch a movie and not worry about it for 2 hours. In fact, normally what I do is I take 2 movies back to back, and I say, okay, I'll watch, you know, this one, and we'll come out of the movie theater, get a Coke or something, and then go back and watch the other one. That's my release of stress at working out as well. I just love movies.
How did you enjoy Red?
I loved it. Great cast.
Yep.
And one of the things about when you get a great bunch of people on a movie, the movie can, you know, the script can be not as strong, but because you enjoy them movies, them people, you enjoy that movie. I watched that Unstoppable with
Denzel
Washington, who was absolutely amazing, mm-hmm. and my heart was pounding the whole way through that.
It was.
It was just an awesome movie.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, movies and food are good.
Well, what do you make around the house a snack on when it's movie night at the Irvine House? Stuff that you can't get in the at the movie theaters?
No, I'm a big believer in sweet popcorn. You know, candy popcorn. I love it. I do chocolate raisins. I do egg sandwiches. I'm a freak. Take poached eggs and make sandwiches out of it. You know.
Uh huh.
But really just, I don't do soda that much. I do a lot of water and a couple of beers now and again. But I just love to pick a food.
Mm-hmm.
Popcorn is my absolute favorite, but it can't be buttered. I don't like that butter stuff. It's got to be caramel for me. Yeah, and I normally freeze my chocolate. So if I have like Snickers or Twixes or I put them in the freezer for a couple of days, and then I eat them frozen. Love it.
Well, did I read right? You grew up in Wiltshire?
Wiltshire, England, yeah.
What was the name of the movie house in your neighborhood?
we didn't have, there's no name in the movie house. What it is, okay, in Salisbury itself, which is an old wool town, you know, it's very historic. It used to be the mayor's house, and they made it into this movie theater that had six movie theaters, you know, in one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Woolpack. And I used to go there when I was a child, you know, on a Saturday mornings. They would have, like, you know, kids for X amount of pounds, and you could go in and watch movies from 8 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, straight through, they would just keep running movies. You know, so it was a great place. It was a great place to sit and eat garbage, meet your friends, and watch movies that you were fed up with them, you know?
Do you remember what some of the films were?
Oh, geez. No. I mean, I am so old now. I'm 45 years old now. I was a kid. I was 8 years old.
Yeah, but I remember what I saw when I was 7 and 8.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't remember what I saw last week. That is funny. I mean, I only just watched, and you just heard me. I only just watched Unstoppable. I don't remember Denzel Washington's name. You know, it's just. Oh, what did I also see? Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie.
The Tourist.
Is it American?
The Tourist.
Oh, Tourist. I just watched that too.
You enjoyed that?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. A little slow to start with, but I did enjoy it because I figured it out before, you know, the end.
Right. So
I like it when I figure it out and I'm not stumped.
Well, with your memories, well, I'll cross off the History of Hammer Horror and Cliff Richard. Those are out. That's okay.
Cliff Richard. Now there's a name from the past.
My daughter loves Summer Holiday. We have a British telly club here at WFYI, and we showed as a like on a Sunday afternoon we showed it to members as a, you know, kind of a thank you gift, and my daughter was 4 and she's dancing to Cliff Richard in the back of the auditorium, and I thought and so of course, you know, she asked if we could buy these and I went, yeah, sure. So a new generation.
Yeah, on the bus, I remember that. Yep. Right, we went on a bus.
That's right.
And there's one scene, if I recall right, they stood on top of a hill.
Yep.
Looking over something.
Well, and the guy who directed that, it was Peter Yates, who would later do Bullet and Breaking Away and do, you know, action films. And Herbert Ross, who's a famous choreographer, did the choreography. I thought it was just going to be 2 hours of twisting at a discotheque, and it was much more than that. So.
Well, if you know any of these people, I want to do a movie too. I think I'd be a good action figure. I don't know.
How come you didn't get into the Expendables? Every other guy was. Of course, you're under the ages.
I mean, look at the size of them and who they are. I mean.
Yep. Just because you're under 60.
Hey, listen, I'm just a cook on the Food Network. Just remember that. But I would love to do a movie. I did a little stint on Drop Dead Diva with Paula Abdul, where I was playing myself in a dream of hers making French fries, but acting to a script. It was kind of funny. But I would love to have a shot at doing a movie.
It's possible.
I don't think I'd be any good at it, but I would love to do it.
Come on,
I can look the part, right?
Oh, absolutely. You got the guns.
Hey, listen, if Dwayne Johnson can do it and Stone Cold Steve Austin and all these guys, I think I can do it.
And you handle wrestlers in the kitchen. We saw that.
Yeah. We had wrestlers in the kitchen. Gail Kim. I had The Miz. And, Faxino. That was hilarious.
We'll work on that. We'll work, you know, chef by day and crime fighter by night. We'll work on
your
cape.
There you go. And I can't wait to see Green Hornet. I kind of like that, too.
Cool.
I haven't seen it yet, but I can't wait to see that.
And if you do a buddy cop film with Helen Mirren, I'm there.
Oh, you know, I watched Helen Mirren when I was growing up, and she did Prime Suspect was the name of the show.
Oh, sure.
And I was, like, mesmerized by this show. And she has always been such an amazing actress, and everything she's done, the Green and all that sort of stuff. Just amazing how one person can immerse himself and become that person. I also watched, Facebook or social media.
Which
I thought was another great movie.
And has the King's Speech come down to your neck of the woods?
No, not yet.
Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Who's that?
Colin Firth as Colin Firth, Helena Bonham Carter, Jeffrey Rush. It's the king who has the stutter beginning of World War II.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it.
George VI.
I just haven't. I haven't seen it anywhere around here. But I normally end up in a major city somewhere. That's the fun part.
Well, Chef Irvine, thank you so much for taking time out on Film Sociology. Hopefully we can get you in Indianapolis sometime, but can't wait to see you on the telly.
Hey, listen, you've got my number. You call me anytime, and don't forget, any action movie you want, I'm in.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you didn't say other kinds of video nasties or anything like that.
And thus, a regular guest was born, and a friend, but he's busy. It's okay. That's Robert Irvine from 2010, his first time on Film Sociology. I play that because the Robert Irvine dining experience is happening at the Hollywood Casino in Lawrenceburg, Indiana on Saturday. Go to chefirvine.com/events. You can learn about that. You can learn about the documentary he's an executive producer on, Hell or High Seas, which we profiled on the show a while back. And he's got spirits and he's got shows and he's just all over the place. So, yep, hopefully Chef Robert will dip into Film Sociology and dip into the pool once again. Always good to replay our chats. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. As mentioned, Indie Bard Fest is wrapping up with Elizabeth Rex this weekend at the Arts for Lawrence and Theater on the Fort. So go to IndieBardFest.com for tickets and information. And the Saturday after Thanksgiving, I'll be back at Arts for Lawrence and Theater at the Fort, co-hosting a screening of It's a Wonderful Life with Jay Hemphill, who's in the show with me. So, you go check out all that information over there. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching over the last week. And again, I appreciate everybody's contribution to public radio goodness, and especially with the changes in schedule. And hopefully I'll get back to my old routine on next week's Film Sociology. We'll just have to see. We start on Twitter with Bill Reinhardt. Bill's another guy I got to get on the show. He's one of the voices over at WVXU in Cincinnati and always provides fun content and fun banter on Twitter. Bill writes, Sahara, the Jim Belushi remake. Okay, the first 20 minutes of Lost Horizon, the remake, Once Upon a Crime and The Mouse That Roared. Good random list there, Bill. And also, scrolling, Terry writes, Last Night in Soho, and deemed it good. So there you go over there. All right, going to Facebook, Jesse writes, Psycho, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Bride of Frankenstein, Big Trouble in Little China, and Vampire, V-A-M-P-Y-R. Christos writes, Dune. It's subject to a ton of modern cinematic trends, booming orchestral droning, large sweeping CGI shots. But the acting was great, and it's introducing multiple new generations to a sci-fi classic. Excited to see the second half. And so am I. I'm with you on that. It's an exception to my one book, one film rule. I know it's dense, the book. Linda writes, Beetlejuice and Harry Potter, the last one, lost count, as I understand, Linda, and the new James Bond film, thank you. Jay writes, Jay Hemphill, Teen Witch and Dune, probably not a double feature. Jackie writes, Downsizing. Jose writes, Red Notice, more twists and turns than a bag of worms, big fun. Thank you, Jose. Ed writes, Saw Fury today on a plane, my seatmate on each leg of my trip was watching 1917, so I sort of watched that too. Well, good, interesting double feature there, Ed. Thank you. Steven writes, we needed a breather after our first run-through of Long Day's Journey into Night, so we watched Desperate Remedies. Thank you, Steven. I'm glad to know someone else is doing really, really long theater. Chris Lloyd, Fill Me Up. Implanted, Vera Cruz, and watching Clifford the Big Red Dog tonight. Thank you, Chris. You'll hopefully see some writings by a certain film sociology guest on the Film Me Up website very soon. Eric Bryant, who's in Elizabeth Rex with me. The only film I've watched is the one that formed on my undrunk coffee. Thank you. And then we got into Carly Simon songs. Rachel writes, Double World, Munster Go Home, and Eight Below. Lou Harry, Train to Busan, Wes Craven's New Nightmare, Holiday Affair, Damn Yankees, and Finch. Missy writes, 15 Things You Didn't Know About Bigfoot. Cool. Joe writes, Victoria and Abdul, Kami Rule, King Arthur, The Legend of the Sword, The Forgotten Battle, The McMasters, and Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. from 1955. Melissa writes, Eternals, again, 13 Ghosts, and not a movie, but I binged Mayor of Easttown, and I'm so glad I did. Sorry for the editorial. It's just so good. No need to be sorry for the editorial, Melissa. This is part of the show. You tell me what movies you've watched, and hopefully you also tell me what you thought of the films you watched. That's okay. That's what we do here at Film Sociology. Andrea writes, Interstellar. Nikki writes, Antlers in the Theater, Gladiator at Home. Thank you, Nikki. Nikki's also in Elizabeth Rex with me. Michelle writes, Come Away and Star Trek Beyond. Paul writes, Went to the cinema twice this week. Wanted to catch Dune before it left theaters and then saw The Eternals on opening weekend. I enjoyed them both. Thank you, Paul. Nicole writes, Hocus Pocus. I had never seen it and felt like I should. And then Erica chimes in, My theory is that it's beloved by people who first saw it as kids, otherwise not so much. Eric, I'm with you on that. I mentioned before, I saw it when I was in college, and it didn't grab me as much as it does younger folks. The three ladies are fine together, and, well, they're making another one, so there's that. Martin writes, Godfather 3, Coda, the death of Michael Corleone version. Oh, and the hammy cheese fest of emotions. Yes, thank you, Martin. J. Kevin writes, 21 Bridges, The Fifth Element, and The Fifth Quarter. Stephanie writes, Right now, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, waiting for Ghostbusters Afterlife tickets to go on sale. Last trailer was so great, I cried. Thank you, Stephanie. Rosalie writes, Eternals, on a date night with the mister. Thank you. Emily writes, My Spy. Nick Rogers writes, Mass, Ron's Gone Wrong, King Richard, Ghostbusters 2, Ninja Baby, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, the 2016 Ghostbusters, The Green Knight, Quo Vadis, Aida, The Sparks Brothers, and The Mitchells vs. The Machines. Jeff writes, HUD and Clifford on the same night. I was completely sober, too. Thank you, Jeff. Jared writes, Dune. Erica's back writing The Grifters, The Disaster Artist, and the Riff Tracks treatment of Psycho 2. Wow, I need to check that out because I saw Psycho 2 in the theater, 1982, if I remember correctly. Scotty writes, French Dispatch, stunning production design, amazing and beloved actors giving fab performances, three clever, fascinating vignettes. Enjoyed it while watching it, but left the theater feeling oddly unfulfilled, and I'm not sure why. Perhaps because the cold news reporting style was of a nature that holds the audience at a distance and doesn't allow you to warm, to connect, or to root for any of the characters. And perhaps that's what was Wes Anderson's intent. Thank you, Scooter. Good call there. Tony writes, Goodfellas and Big Night. That's a double feature. That's really strong. I love Big Night. And Missy writes, I need to check out Big Night. Everybody needs to check out Big Night. Dear Criterion, please do a treatment of Big Night, please. By the way, a certain bookstore in town still has 50% off Criterion titles, so just saying. Kelly writes The French Dispatch. Nancy writes The Harder They Fall. Vin writes, I just watched Married to the Mob, a Jonathan Demme classic. Dean Stockwell passed away today at the time of this posting. Thank you. Yeah, we're gonna end this week's Film Sociology with a little tribute to Dean Stockwell. Megan writes, The Mirror Has Two Faces. Yeah, I said it. I'm going to be paraphrasing Paul Rudnick, who I believe wrote, the film should just be called Yes, Barbara, You're Pretty. Dustin writes, The Story of the Animated Drawing from 1955. Wow, the effects of gamma rays on Man in the Moon Marigolds from 1972. Good choice there, Dusty. And the 2016 TV movie All the Way. Daniel writes, The 2021 Cinderella, Psycho, The Closet, Foul Play, Arthur, The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne, The Wolfman, Life with Father, Betrayed, Force of Evil, Captain Paradise, and Bye Bye Birdie. Chad writes, The Harder They Fall, and Eternals. Taylor writes, Dune, Terror by Night, that's Basil Rathbone, Cat People, 200 Motels, Baby Snakes, Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, Iron Man 3, No Time to Die, Ice Station Zebra, Five Steps to Danger, Noir Alley, and The French Dispatch. Kurt writes, An Officer and a Gentleman. Stephanie writes, Just got my Thursday preview ticket for Ghostbusters Afterlife. Congratulations, Stephanie. I'm now getting film
updates on before they even watch stuff. I love this show. Rebecca writes The Electrical Life of Lewis Wayne. Eden writes The Harder They Fall on Netflix. Chris writes Last Night in Soho. Nancy writes The French Dispatch. Jose writes Red Notice, Big Fun. Tony writes Last Night in Soho. Eric writes two noir-y classics almost 50 years apart, High Sierra and David Mamet's House of Games. Good double feature there, Eric. Andra Faye writes Stir of Echoes. Austin, yes, Austin, Medium Cool Podcast. And I swear, Austin, we got to get back to in work on Medium Cool. The 2021 Cram begins. If you're a film critic, you know exactly what we're talking about. Cruella, Raya and the Last Dragon, The Velvet Underground, and Pig. Award screeners are coming, folks. These are first world critic problems. Glenn writes Dune. You write Dune every week, Glenn. He's actually probably watching it every week. RJ writes The Harder They Fall. Kate writes Going South, starring Jack Nicholson and introducing Mary Steenburgen. That's right. And I saw that in the theater. And Steven has wonderful Mary Steenburgen stories, which I'm going to share. Back in the 70s, I worked as a host at the Magic Pan on East 57th Street, right next to the Hamacher Schlemmer, when Mary was a waitress there. We used to take our lunches together, was working with her during the time when she went in for a call for something else, and was spotted by Jack Nicholson, who asked her to audition for Going South. She was, and I assume still is, totally genuine, a terrific talent, and an absolute sweetie. Thank you, Steven. Like the stories there. David writes The Midnight Sky, Taken, and the Lord of the Ring trilogy extended editions, as well as Keith Richards' Under the Influence. Lila writes Finch. As much as I'd like to talk about it, I won't spoil it for those who haven't seen it or haven't had the chance to see it. Thank you, Lila. Jesse writes 1984, Taking Tiger Mountain, Up the Down Staircase, The Bandwagon, Just One of the Guys, and The French Dispatch in the theater. So congratulations, Jesse. Super fun, and we'll watch again. Stan writes, regarding Henry, The Shootist, Free Guy, Last Action Hero, and Killing Gunther. Mary writes, Hot Fuzz, End of the World, and Rocky Horror. Susie writes, Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day. Good choice there, Susie. Jed Bryan, I watched All Through the Night with Bogart and Laurie for the first time. What an amazing film. Also, Duck Soup and A Night in Casablanca. Both were amazing. Really having a blast discovering all these classics. Thank you, Jed. That's what you do, is find new films that are new to you. They don't have to be brand spanking new, but you get the idea. Mike writes To Kill a Mockingbird. Ross writes Coda. Don writes The Harder They Fall. Scott writes Blow Up. Cassie writes Gambit, Out to Lunch, and Werewolves Within. John writes High Risk, 1981. How did this movie get made with those actors' pick of the week? You're right on this. I remember Siskel and Ebert raving about this film. James Brolin, Anthony Quinn, Cleavon Little, Bruce Davison, James Coburn, Ernest Borgnine, and this thing is possibly the most ridiculous and improbable script ever. John, I get you. It was also on HBO a lot in the early 80s. So let's see. Jim writes Django, the Franco Nero one, as well as The Lighthouse. Everin writes Spencer and Wolf, incredibly moving. That's about Spencer. Walter writes Yellowstone on Peacock. Beverly writes Adam's Family Values. Linda writes The Mule and Angel Has Fallen. Tom writes That Thing You Do, still a simple and beautiful film, lovingly made. Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. My buddy Laura calls it the nicest movie ever made, and I stand by that. And I am unanimous in that. Dune writes, like Lord of the Ring, about Dune, like Lord of the Rings, too big to handle in one film, and it clearly will have a sequel. Too much exposition, not enough of Frank Herbert's. We emerge with a collective meh. Okay. An American Haunting, never seen an interesting movie unravel so quickly in the last reel. Lots of wasted talent. And The French Dispatch, couldn't wait to see it. Love Wes Anderson, left with a mixed feeling. Not our favorite Wes Anderson film. Enjoyed the Swinton Del Toro piece best. Thank you there, Tom. Thomas, different person, writes Diana, the musical on Netflix. Britt writes The Book of Life, Eddie Izzard, Unrepeatable, as well as Eddie Izzard, Live at Madison Square Garden, The Avengers, RV, and Shrek the Musical. Cassie writes, I also watched Noble Son. I forgot about that one. No, no problem, Cassie. Don't edit your original post. Just post. I'm busting your chops. It's okay. Ben writes The Sparks Brothers. Beverly writes Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Olivia writes Dune, The Last Duel, Late Night in Soho, and The Eternals. I saw The Last Duel in theaters last week, friends. After I was killing time before the Saturday matinee. I liked it. I liked the performances. It's funny to watch Ben Affleck just chew scenery as and with his blonde hair. And it's a Rashomon story told from the point of view of three people, two men and a woman. And it is, if anything else, it is Ridley Scott's very long and very expensive reminder that men just suck. So you've been warned. But it is worth seeing on a big screen. Thank you, Olivia. David writes Finch. Gary writes Soul, Fiddler on the Roof, Luca, Black Widow, The Avengers Endgame, Eternals, Happy Gilmore, Nosferatu in Venice, Deep Blood, and Captain Marvel. Khalif writes The Harder They Fall and deemed it excellent with many exclamation points. Joni writes The Electrical World of Lewis Wayne and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Terry writes Bram Stoker's Dracula, pretty much a yearly rewatch. That's not bad, Terry. Nothing wrong with that. Aaron writes El Camino. Michael writes The Human Condition. Doug writes For My Class, Chicago related, Brian's Song, Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, Chirac, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Others, non-Chicago apparently, The Black Swan from 1942, Mama Rosa, and The Celluloid Closet. I love The Celluloid Closet, Doug. That's one I watch every year. And I'm glad more people are experiencing Chirac. That's an underappreciated film from Spike Lee. Tracy writes Aladdin, Coco, Book of Life, Boss Baby 2, and Running Scared. Oof. Wow. Alan, do you mean the Billy Crystal, Gregory Hines Running Scared, or the Paul Walker Running Scared, Tracy? Well, I should have asked. Alan writes Black Widow from 1987. That's the one with Deborah Winger and Teresa Russell. Russ writes Zorro the Gay Blade. Wow. Lauren Hutton in that one. Oh, yeah, and that George Hamilton guy. Steve writes Dune. James writes Clute, Claire's Knee, and Halloween Kills. And I just revisited Clute. We have it on Criterion Blu-ray. And, yeah, really, really strong. Strong still. And finally, Kathleen writes Steel City. So there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching over the last week. So hopefully you found some titles. Whoop. There's a text for me. I hope you found some titles that are new or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Now, I want to have a little tribute, a raise a glass, to actor Dean Stockwell, who passed away earlier this week. This is a man whose career spans 7 decades. Yes, I will be scrolling. It's that impressive. And it's one of those guys where I got to know him probably through Blue Velvet and Married to the Mob. And, of course, you know, he got a big boost on Quantum Leap. And then when I think it was in college when I discovered the film version of Long Day's Journey into Night and realized he was in that, I was like, oh, wow, young Dean Stockwell. And by the way, that film is still has my favorite Katharine Hepburn performance. And then I went back and found out he was a child actor back in the 1940s, appearing in such films as Anchors Away, The Valley of Decision, Home Sweet Homicide, Song of the Thin Man, which I had just last year, I believe, I went through the Thin Man series thanks to my in-laws. Gentleman's Agreement, Deep Waters. Of course, he was the boy with green hair. The Secret Garden from 1949. Cattle Drive, Gun for a Coward in 1956. I mean, just constantly working. Compulsion from 1959. Sons and Lovers. Did a lot of TV in the 1960s. Appeared in Psych Out in 1968. The Dunwich Horror, which, yeah, I own that. Played Billy the Kid in the last movie. The Loners from 1972. The Pacific Connection. Wind Placer Steel. Tracks. Yes, he was one of half the Screen Actors Guild that appeared in One Ton Ton, The Dog Who Saved Hollywood. Wrong is Right. She Came to the Valley. Another text for me. And oh, the other one I know that I got, I heard about him was, of course, Paris, Texas from 1984. Legend of Billy King, To Live and Die in L.A., Once Bitten, who I mentioned Ben and Blue Velvet, Gardens of Stone, Beverly Hills Cop 2, The Blue Iguana, The Time Guardian, Limit Up, Catch Fire, and one of those guys also appeared in The Player, did a lot of stuff I hadn't seen, but also was one of those guys that always brought the film or TV quality up with his presence. Chasers from 1994, Mr. Wrong from 1996, Living in Peril, Midnight Blue, The Rainmaker in 1997 with Coppola, The Venice Project, Rites of Passage, The Flunky, CQ, another Coppola picture, Buffalo Soldiers, the remake of The Manchurian Candidate, and yeah, his last credit from 2015, simply titled Entertainment. So salute to Dean Stockwell. That's a hell of a career, man. That's a long, long work span. We should be so lucky. And if you're a friend of Blue Velvet, you know this is coming. So salute to Dean Stockwell, and we'll chat again next week. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting Film Sociology and all things public radio goodness. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say a silent prayer like dreamers do. Then I fall asleep to dream my dreams of you. In dreams I walk with you.
In dreams. I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!